I remembered sitting there thinking to myself, this is now January 25th. Joe Biden became president 5 days before my arrest. The Democrats are in full control of the federal government. I'm Brandon Strock, the walk away from the Democratic Party guy, and I'm facing multiple felony charges, and I don't even know what they are.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to a very special extra deep dive episode of the Chicks on the Right podcast. This is unusual, but now that we are full-time chicks, we have an opportunity to do some extra podcasts whenever we darn feel like it. And this was one of those moments where we thought we have an opportunity to talk to a good friend of ours, good friend of the show, Brandon Strock from the Walk Away movement, who you may know from such things as being one of the people who was arrested for activities on January 6th. And Brandon told his story very, very completely and thoroughly, along with video, to Mark Levin. We highly encourage everybody to go listen and or watch that interview, because it's a very thorough retelling of what you saw that day. So we're not going to get into quite as much detail about that with you today, because people should hear the whole story through that channel. But the main point, I guess, for you is that you, like so many other people who were there, Daisy's got a friend who was there that day, thought it was like this really great event. They had no idea that on one side of the Capitol, there was absolute mayhem, because on other sides, including the east side that you were on, things were not like they were not that chaotic. Mm-hmm. So give a quick summary, if you would, of just your experience of the day and how it's so not the narrative that we're hearing in the media.
Well, I guess, you know, even based off of what you just said, one of the first things I'd like to point out is that I wasn't at the Capitol very long. I mean, it was a very, very short period of time that I was there. The majority of the day was spent at the Ellipse, which was the first part of the event where President Trump spoke and a number of other people spoke. And then where people watching at home or who saw pictures online probably saw that there was a sea of people that went from the front row at the Ellipse almost all the way back to the Washington Monument. And that's, I mean, honestly, I would estimate hundreds of thousands of people were there. And I took pictures and videos, huge crowd. So the majority of the day for me up until around 2:30 p.m. was spent there at the Ellipse. And because there were so many people, it was very difficult to get out. It took probably at least an hour just to be able to get out of the Ellipse grounds. And I was scheduled to be a speaker at the Capitol that day. A lot of people don't know or understand that there was another event. It was supposed to be a march to the Capitol, which was followed by dozens of speakers speaking at an event there at the Capitol. And so I made my way to the Capitol as expeditiously as I could, because it was, again, very difficult to get from point A to point B. And by the time I was getting close to the Capitol, which is to say probably 10, 15 minutes away by foot, I started getting text messages from people, most of whom were at home watching on television, saying people are going inside the building, things like that. Now, I really want people to remember that none of us had the benefit, A, of watching this on television, right, and seeing what people at home were seeing, and B, that nothing like this had happened before. So when I was hearing things like people were going inside, the first thing I thought of, honestly, I'm not making this up, was like when Alyssa Milano went into one of the Senate buildings with a group of women behind her, and they were pounding on one of the senators' doors saying, "We want to talk to you. We want to talk to you." And I think that was about Brett Kavanaugh, yeah, or something. And then, of course, during the Kavanaugh confirmation, there were a number of times that left-wing protesters went inside, shouted. They were immediately pulled away after they shouted. I thought to myself that a handful of people had gone inside the building and they were going to go in there and say, you know, "We want an audit. We want an audit." And they would probably get pulled out of the building. You know, and I just thought, wow, Trump supporters, conservatives don't usually do this. Like, this is how much this means to these people. So I continued forward, not really sure what was going on, because at this point, I also started getting text messages from some of the speakers, fellow speakers, saying, what's going on? Is our event still happening? Is it not still happening? No one understood what was happening. So I continued forward thinking either I'm still speaking or something very unique and unusual is happening at the Capitol and I want to document what's going on. And so I approached the Capitol on the east side grounds and I started shooting video immediately. I mean, when I was on the before I even really entered the Capitol grounds, because I thought to myself, I've done this enough for anyone who's followed me for years. They know that I've gone to Trump rallies. I've gone to the Women's March. I've gone to Antifa protests. I've gone to Black Lives Matter protests. I've documented dozens and dozens of events. And I know that it's always better to get more footage than less because you never know what's going to happen. So I started shooting really early. And so there's minutes and minutes and minutes of footage of me entering the Capitol grounds where you're just watching people milling about and it's very calm. There aren't any police officers in the shot at all. There are no barricades. There's nothing there to indicate you're not supposed to be here. This is forbidden or not allowed. And I just walked onto the grounds and made my way toward the steps on the east side of the building, which is opposite of where the violence and everything that the window smashing was happening on the west side. And I made my way to the top of the east side steps. There was a man standing at the top. This is all seen in my video, holding his hat in his hand and waving down to the people below saying, they've opened the doors. They're letting us in. We're going inside. We're going inside. And at that point, I stood at the top of the steps for 8 minutes with my arms fully extended above my head because there were a lot of people there. Many of them were taller than me. And I pointed my camera toward the two open doors. The doors were open when I got to the top of the steps. And I filmed for 8 minutes. And the end point for me was when a man walked out of the Capitol after approximately 8 minutes. And he said he got on a bullhorn and he said, they've cleared Congress. Everybody clear out, everybody clear out. And I literally immediately turned around and I told the people behind me, you're supposed to clear out, go this way, go this way. And then I walked down the steps and I spent approximately 20-30 minutes on the outer grounds interviewing people. I took 13 videos, what did you see? What was your experience? And then I went back to my hotel I got back to my hotel about, hour and a half, 2 hours later. And I uploaded the video that I took on the Capitol. That it was about a 10 minute video. I uploaded it to Twitter and the rest was kind of history until about 2 hours after I uploaded that video to Twitter is when I started seeing on the news at my hotel room footage of people on the opposite side of the building scaling the wall and breaking windows and things like that. And I thought to myself, oh my God, something is way bigger here than what I witnessed and what I realized. And at that point, I took my video off of Twitter and I put out several tweets saying things like, hold the line, Patriots at the Capitol, hold the line. Because when I left, the people were just standing on the grounds. People had karaoke machines. People were singing songs. And I thought to myself, stay there, spend the night, stay till tomorrow, just hold your ground, but then I became kind of embarrassed. I thought, well, this is something obviously much bigger than what I realized had happened. So I took all that down. But it was too late because, Twitter trolls had already copied my video. They were reposting it. They were tagging the FBI. And that video that I posted on Twitter is what led to my arrest 2.5 weeks later.
God. So couple things, because like the main thing, first of all, is that you never entered the Capitol. Like you never actually went in, and your video shows that very clearly. But what I didn't realize when I was listening to your interview with Mark is that it is illegal to be on the Capitol steps. Is that right?
It is against the law to protest on the Capitol steps.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Right. Now, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that the DOJ is very selective about when they charge people. And generally, when they do charge people, those charges get dismissed.
And wait, and what kind of a charge is it normally? Is it usually a misdemeanor or a felony? I'm just curious. Do you know?
I would guess that for most people, it's a misdemeanor.
Right. Okay.
For me, it was a felony.
Okay.
But here's an example. Jane Fonda in 2018, 2019, probably 2019, she protested climate change on the Capitol steps 5 Fridays in a row.
Right. I remember that. We talked about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So 5 Fridays in a row, she was arrested for the exact same crime. So she was a 5-time repeat offender within 5 weeks of protesting on the Capitol steps, but none of her charges were kept. They dismissed every one of her charges after arresting her. Now, to be clear, I am not comparing the situations. You know, Jane Fonda wasn't there while people were going inside the Capitol and there was mayhem. So I'm not trying to say it's the exact same situation, but I am saying she did it 5 times in a row,
right,
and was charged 5 times in a row. And all 5 times the decision was made to dismiss those charges.
Right. And she's not, you know, she's not having to be patted down before she gets on a plane.
No.
And she's classified as a terrorist. So there's that.
Correct.
Yeah,
right.
There's that too. Yeah, so when you're arrested, so the FBI, FBI comes into your house, so they knock on the door, they pound on the door.
And this
How does that go down? This is, you said 2 weeks later?
4 days.
4 days later?
No. It was January 25th, so it was about 2.5 weeks later.
Okay.
Oh, that's right, because this is January 6th. I'm thinking of his inauguration date. That's right.
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 So they come in 2.5 weeks later. They knock on your door. They pound on your. How does that happen? Because they come in, they arrest you. You're just like, what the hell's going on? Like, how does all that go down?
Well, I'll give you a little insider piece of information that I've never told anyone before. So for the 2.5 weeks leading up to my arrest, as I said, I mean, it was relentless that on Twitter, people were tagging me and tagging the FBI and telling them to have me arrested.
My God.
It would not stop. You know, it would not stop all day long, every day for 2.5 weeks. And it was either the day before I was arrested or 2 days maximum before I was arrested. I read this tweet that somebody wrote that they tagged me in, that it turned my stomach and it gave me the most uneasy feeling. Somebody wrote something like, I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, don't sleep too easy, Brandon Strock. FBI knocks come at 6 a.m. And I remember reading that and just being like, ooh, like it just gave me this weird feeling. And then I think it was the next day.
Oh, my God.
At most 2 days later, I was sleeping. And I woke up to the sound of knocking at my door. And I knew, you know, you can feel when it's really early. And I was like, wow. And my first thought was that the maintenance person at my apartment had come really early. And I was like, why is he here so early? And then the second I was having that thought, it changed to boom, boom, boom,
oh,
boom,
my
boom.
God.
And I just shot up in bed. And I shot up in bed and I went, oh, my God, they really came. This really is happening. And I could tell by the way they were pounding that if I didn't get to the door immediately, it was going to get broken down. And so I just went running to my door and I said, who is it? Who is it? And they said, FBI, open up.
Oh my God.
And I opened the door and there was a team of FBI agents. I would estimate 7, 8, or 9 in SWAT gear.
Right. Well, you're really scary. I mean, you're totally scary.
7, 8, or 9?
7, 8, or 9 people have to take you down. Right. I mean,
oh my God.
Makes complete sense. Okay. I'm being facetious. I'm being completely
no,
sarcastic.
I know. Within about 60 seconds or less, I was turned around and handcuffed. I was, to give a little context, I have really bad eyesight. So if I'm not wearing glasses or contact, I can't see a thing. And I wasn't, because I'd run to the door so fast. So I'm sitting there in pajama pants. I had no shirt on. I couldn't see. And I now have my arms behind my back. I'm cuffed. And all I can really make out are just these agents coming into my apartment. They presented me with a search warrant and a team of people just began stripping my apartment, taking things.
Oh, my God.
And there was a lead agent who said to me, do you know why we're here? And I said, no. And he said, you have no idea why we're here. And I said, well, I'm assuming you're here in regards to January 6th. But no, I don't know why you're here. And he said to me, well, you're under arrest. You're facing multiple felony charges for what you did at the Capitol. And I remember I cut him off and I said, felonies? I said, I didn't even commit any crimes. And he said, oh, he said, I saw the video. I saw what you did. He was like, yeah, you definitely. And I'm telling you, it's like I went crazy for a second. I all of a sudden I sat there and I was like, did I do something? And I forgot, like, did I get into a fist fight with someone and I forgot? My brain was just scrambling to try to remember what I had done, you know, because I'm thinking felony charges. That's really serious. And they tried to get me to answer questions, and I told them I couldn't answer any questions without an attorney. So he said to me, so you're refusing to cooperate. And I said, no. I said, I'm definitely not refusing to cooperate, but I'm telling you that I cannot answer any questions without an attorney present. He said, okay, that's fine. That's fine. And at that point, I was sitting down. They lifted me up and they paraded me through the hallway of my apartment building and took me down and put me in a car.
But like, okay, I know this is really stupid to ask, but this is the kind of stuff that I think people just are curious about. Like, when they take all the crap out of your apartment, do they lock the door behind them? Do they allow you to like let somebody know? What if you had a dog? Like, these are right. The things that I think about.
Yeah, exactly. Like what happens? Do they allow you to put a freaking shirt on and like a sweatshirt if it's cold? Like I'm a mother. I need to know these things. I want to know. Like what's going on? Right. I need to know.
Yeah, no, I understand. They did let me put a shirt on and they let me put my glasses on before we walked out the door. No, in terms of if you had a pet, I believe you'd be screwed.
Oh my God.
And no, absolutely not. I mean, so two agents, I think it was two, it may have been three. Two agents took me out of the apartment and down to the car and the other stayed. So when they took me off to jail, I still had six people in my apartment rifling through my things.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. Okay.
So where did you go exactly? Like, where were you taken and what was that whole process like?
It was horrific. And that was like really the source of where the PTSD that I developed began, because they put me in a black car. The first thing I remember is walking outside and being shocked because there had been a big blizzard during the night and I didn't know that. And so when I walked outside, everything was white. There were just like mountains of snow everywhere. Everything was white. And they put me in a black car and drove me to the jail, which was six blocks or so. It was very close to my apartment. And it was kind of like a movie, like a horrible movie. They drove me into a garage and parked the car there. And I mean, the moment that you enter the jail system or a prison system, it's like entering an alternate reality where everything is just so dark and dank and stark and depressing. I mean, so we're in this garage where everything is just sort of made of concrete bricks and just everything is like concrete. And they walked me into the building and took me into a processing room. And it's like everything that could go wrong did go wrong. I remember that they couldn't get my handcuffs off. And I was like shaking. My heart was like leaping out of my chest.
I can't imagine. Yeah.
And they couldn't get the key to work on my handcuffs. And they had like multiple agents coming and trying multiple keys. And I remember I was just like, I probably shouldn't swear on this show.
You can.
It's okay. You're allowed to say anything on this show. Yeah. You can say whatever.
Okay. I was literally like, get these fucking cuffs off me. Right. Get these fucking cuffs off me. It took forever. And they finally got the cuffs off me. I remembered asking if I could, if they would give me permission to pace, because I'm like, even when I'm not in a state of hysteria, even the fact that I'm sitting right now is a miracle. I'm just always pacing around and pacing around. I'm in a state of hysteria. And because they told me, go sit on that bench. So I was sitting on the bench and I said, can I please just get up and move around? And they said, sure, go ahead. Because they're going through, they've got my wallet, my clothes. They're taking they're counting my cash, documenting everything. They've taken, like I had sunglasses. I think I had a baseball cap on. They were taking those things, putting them in bags. And I began pacing back and forth and just like trying to get my breath under control. And I remembered thinking to myself, oh my God, there's probably cameras everywhere in this room. Everything I'm doing right now is going to be on CNN later tonight. I'm pacing back and forth like a lunatic. I couldn't look more guilty. You know, I'm just like, you know, and so I'm like, so I remembered thinking to myself, sit down and sit on your hands. And that's what I did. I sat back down on the bench and I sat on my hands so that I'd stop like, because I probably looked like I was like a terrorist who orchestrated, like that I created January 6th.
Oh my God.
I'm like you though. I'm totally like you. I'm very fidgety too. I have to move and do the things. I mean, I would just, oh my God, I'd be useless in jail. I would be useless. Yeah. Like I cannot, I don't know. I mean, that's why I'm like, I have extreme anxiety just listening to you right now. My blood pressure. Worse. I know. I can't imagine. So and then you're there and you can't call anybody.
So I that's what I kept asking them. I said, am I going to be able to make a phone call? And they said, we have to process you out here first. They said, after we get done processing you, you're going to walk through that door. They pointed to a door and they said, when you walk through that door, Douglas County is going to take over. That's the jail system that I was in. And they said, at that point, you'll be allowed to make a phone call. Now, at that point in my mind, that door became like my salvation. I was like, okay, all I got to do is just get through that door and then I can make a phone call and everything's going to be okay. I'll be back in my bed tonight. Everything's going to be fine. So we got through the first part of the processing. They opened the door and things became so much worse at that point, because at least the FBI agents were referring to me by my name. You know, they would say, Brandon, you know, we need your hat. Brandon, we need your wallet. Brandon, we need whatever. But the moment that I walked through that door, the first thing that they did was took me over to have my mugshot taken. And immediately after my mugshot was taken, they printed out a bracelet with my mugshot on it and a number. And at that point, I just became a number in the jail system. I literally didn't have a name anymore. And I just thought to myself, this is incredible how quickly you can lose your identity or something like this can happen to somebody. And bear in mind, at this point, nobody even knows that I've been arrested.
Oh my God.
No one has a clue this has happened. So I'm now wearing a bracelet with my mugshot and a number on it. And they took me into a concrete room that I would liken to almost like a dorm shower. You know, it was basically like a concrete stall. And they told me to take all of my clothes off. I'm standing there completely naked in front of a stranger with just this bracelet on. They take my clothes away from me and they came back with a pair of brown boxer shorts brown underwear, a brown t-shirt, an orange pair of pants and an orange smock. And that became my outfit. That became my uniform. And from there, they took me into a room called medical, where I had to sit down with a nurse guard, and the nurse guard told me, I need your arm. And I kind of held out my arm and he had a syringe in his hand and he came at me with a syringe and I said, what are you doing? And he said, all new inmates in the jail system have to take a TB test. You have to give me your arm. And I remembered thinking to myself, I can't argue this. Like I can't refuse this,
right?
Because I'm not even a person. I'm just a number. I'm just a prisoner now. And so he stuck this needle in my arm and injected a substance into my skin and it formed a bubble. And I remember I looked down and he said, you know, if that turns blue or purple, you might want to tell somebody. And I thought, who am I going to tell? Like, I don't even understand what's happening to my life right now.
Oh my God.
From medical, they took me into a room called intake evaluation. And I mean, it was like they couldn't have cast a more terrifying person to do the intake evaluation interview. I mean, it was almost like this stoic kind of military guy, very no nonsense. And I remember he said to me, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions. And he said, they might feel very personal and inappropriate, but he said, I promise you this is standard procedure. And I just thought, okay, let's go. And he starts asking me questions like, have you ever had sex with a man? Do you have AIDS? Have you ever been in a gang? Are you having thoughts of suicide? And I remember when he said, are you having thoughts of suicide? I wanted to make a joke and be like, are you kidding? And then I was like, oh my God, no, no, no. Because I'll end up in a padded cell. Like, this isn't a joke, you know? So I was like, no, 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 I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. And then the question he asked me that I will never forget, he said, if a fight breaks out in the jail, are you able to defend yourself?
What in the world?
I just thought to myself, this is insanity. This is absolutely insane.
What was your answer, Brandon? What was your answer?
I literally shouted, no.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
No, 100% no. I was like, are you under the impression that I want to be here? Like, no, no. you know, 2 hours ago, I was sleeping peacefully in my bed. And now I'm wearing an orange jumpsuit with an injection in my arm, being asked if I can defend myself in the jail system if a fight breaks out.
Right.
Yeah. So suddenly I'm in Oz, not from the Wizard of Oz.
Right. The other one.
Quite the opposite. Yeah. So from there, they told me I could make a phone call. Now, mind you, I keep asking people, am I going to see a judge today? Am I going to see a judge today?
Because it's like early morning still, right?
Yes. At this point, it's probably 8:30 in the morning. So, you know, when I asked if I got to see a judge, the answer I got was no. There was a blizzard last night. The courts are closed today.
That's convenient. That's really convenient for them.
That's what my lawyer said, too.
The FBI was open. What the hell?
Right.
Oh, okay. God.
So they said no. And I was like shaking and I said, well, what about tomorrow? Will I be able to see a judge tomorrow? We don't know. We don't know if the courts will be open tomorrow. I just said, can anyone guarantee me when I will have a chance to see a judge? We have no idea. We don't. It depends on the weather. And then even if the courts reopen, we're back. Now we're behind on cases. Your case may get pushed to the end of the week. This is a Monday. This is a Monday morning. And they're telling me it could be Thursday. It could be Friday. So at that point, I was allowed to make a phone call.
Who did you call? And how did you decide?
I could tell you the short version of the story, but I have a feeling you would find it more entertaining if I told you the whole story. So the only number that I met, because they don't let you use your phone. They don't let you look at a phone book. So the only number that I had memorized were my parents. So who were the last people on the face of the earth that I wanted to call. So first of all, it takes, I'm not making this up. It takes 3 to 5 minutes just to get a phone call out, because you have to listen to this message every time you make a phone call. And the message is at least 3 minutes long, where they're like, welcome to the Douglas County jail system. In order to make a call, you need to, da, da, and it's long. It goes through all of these instructions. And then after you listen to that, you're allowed to make a 60-second phone call after listening to that message. So I called my parents 5 times.
So they let you do that, right? Like they let, if you can't reach
until,
them?
Until you get in touch with somebody. Okay.
Right. Because my parents rejected the call the first 4 times. They were like, we thought it was a prank call. And I was like, well, it wasn't.
Oh my God.
It took about 20 minutes before I was actually, and because it lets you say your name. At first I was saying, it's Brandon. And then like the 5th time that I did it, I said, Dad, it's Brandon, pick up the phone. And so finally my dad answers the phone, and through my parents, I was able to get the phone number of the executive director of Walkaway, Libby Albert. She's my closest friend and my business associate. And I was finally able to get Libby on the phone, and she, that long message that they give you tells you how the person you're calling can put money into the phone bank for a longer than 60-second phone call.
Wow.
So Libby banked about an hour, 60 minutes worth of minutes. And then finally, I was able to actually like have a conversation with her, explain to her that I'd been arrested and that I was in jail. And now about 2 weeks before I got arrested, Facebook banned the Walkaway campaign from Facebook. And so we had hired Harmeet Dhillon to be our attorney to fight back against Facebook banning the Walkaway campaign. Harmeet had asked me in one of the numerous phone calls we had with her if I had been arrested for my time at the Capitol. And I said, no, I was like, I'm not going to get arrested. You know, I didn't even go inside the building. Harmeet told me, if you get arrested, call me immediately and I will help you find a criminal defense attorney. So once I had Libby on the phone, she called Harmeet Dhillon on 3-way. Harmeet then began calling attorneys on my behalf. And very quickly, we got somebody on the phone. And the criminal, his name is Bill Asaley. I know he won't mind me saying that because he's done some media interviews with me since then. But Bill Asaley was one of my criminal defense attorneys on this case. And, so the first conversation he lives in California. I was in Nebraska. And he told me that he would need to find me a criminal defense attorney in the state of Nebraska that he could work and in sort of an advisory role, but that he couldn't actually, you know, take actions on my behalf, not being in the state.
Right.
And so he said, you know, we're going to get to work trying to find you a criminal defense attorney in Nebraska. And they made me get off the phone. And at that point, they gave me my first lunch, which was horrific beyond belief. I didn't eat for days because, I mean, first of all, I was a nervous wreck. But second of all, the food was horrific. But while I was having my lunch, one of the other inmates began talking to me, and he told me.
So wait a minute, are you in a room like full of other inmates at that point, or like where are you?
This was a holding cell in the processing area of the jail. So there were about five of us, again, in this sort of concrete room with just a metal bench and a toilet.
And what did they do? What kind of, are they other people that were arrested?
Yes.
Okay.
They were being processed in as well.
Okay.
For the same thing or like various things?
Various things. The person who I ended up having a conversation with during lunch ended up being my cellmate. So they put me in. He was a four-time repeat offender. This was his fourth time on drug charges. And the other people were there on, you know, various other things as well. But he told me, he said, you know, they're going to put you in lockdown, just so you know. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, they're not going to let you leave your cell. He said, this is not going to be a good situation. And, wow. I'm like wanting to vomit, and I'm just a nervous wreck. And as soon as I got done with lunch, they let us out of that room and they allowed me to make another phone call. That was the one thing that was different than what I expected, was that basically during the period between me getting the uniform and the intake evaluation, whatever, there's a period of time while they're, I guess, preparing where they're going to put you. And at that point, they're just like, yeah, make as many phone calls as you need to make. And so I got back on the phone with Libby. She called my attorney again, that Bill, who Harmeet had found. And I said, I just remember saying, you guys, I'm really, 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 really not doing well. I said, they're telling me that I may be in here for a week or more before I even see a judge. And somebody just told me that I'm going to be in 24-hour lockdown. And I was like, I'm really not doing very well here. And the thing I remember is Bill saying to me, the attorney, he said, Brandon, he was like, you know, he's like, you're strong. He's like, you've got this. And he said, you know, we have laws in this country that are designed to protect innocent people. You're an innocent person. He's like, you just need to get through this and you're going to be okay. And around that time, a guard came and told me that they had to take me to my cell. And the last, I have a really hard time saying this without crying, so I'm going to try to say this today without crying. But the last thing that happened on the phone before I hung up was Libby said to me, she said, listen, I want you, oh, here we go. She said, I want you to know that there are going to be really long periods of time where you don't know what's going on. You're going to be by yourself. You're going to be really, really scared. And she said, and that's okay. But she said, I just want you to know that we're not going to stop fighting for you until we get you out of there. And at that point, I had to hang up the phone, and they took me upstairs to my cell, and they put me in a concrete room with a metal door, and with the guy who was the repeat drug offender, and they shut the door, and no one came back for 2 days.
God. Oh my God.
Days.
Oh my God.
You have no contact with the outside world.
None. And they, there are no books. There are no, I mean, it's you are just there with your own thoughts. And I remembered sitting there thinking to myself that this is now January 25th. Joe Biden became president 5 days before my arrest. The Democrats are in full control of the federal government. I'm Brandon Strock, the walk away from the Democratic Party guy. And I'm facing multiple felony charges, and I don't even know what they are. And I'm thinking to myself, they're going to charge me with treason, terrorism. I mean, I'm literally in there calculating how I'm never going to see the sky again, because I'm thinking to myself, I mean, I know it might sound like ridiculous now, but in the state that I was in, I'm thinking to myself, the punishment for treason is death, you know, and I'm thinking the punishment for, you know, terrorism, all these different things. I mean, I'm looking at like decades in prison, and I'm thinking they're not even going to let me out. A judge is not going to order my release. This is too political. I'm somebody they really want. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm never going to see my parents again. I'm never going to see my grandmother again. I'm just thinking, I can't believe my life is over because I was outside of the Capitol for 8 minutes on January 6th. And I, throughout the course of that 2 days, where I'm sitting there not thinking what's, not understanding, not knowing what's going to happen, and thinking, you know, the very, very worst. I want, you know, I consider myself to be a really strong person. It's not that I was crumbling or anything because I was weak. It was that the fear, it's hard to describe this level of fear. It's a level of fear where like literally every cell in your body is screaming. Like you feel like you're on fire. All you want to do is get out of this room. Just get out, and like run. And you can't because you're trapped like an animal. And I remember having thoughts numerous times because when my cellmate was sleeping very peacefully.
He'd done this before.
But I hardly slept. I didn't eat. And all I would do was pace back and forth and back and forth. And it was 4.5 steps from the bunk bed to the door and from the door back to the bunk bed. And I would walk 4.5 steps and walk 4.5 steps and walk 4.5 steps. I would do this for hours and hours and hours. And as I would walk back from the door to the bunk bed, I was on the top. Several times I thought to myself, if I just take off my sheet and wrap it around my neck and tie it to the ladder of the bed and just squat down, I'll just choke out and this will be over and I won't have to be afraid anymore. I won't have to face whatever's coming next. And I thought several times, honestly, about doing that. You know, and if I had known, if somebody had told me, look, you're going to get out in a couple of days and in the end, you're going to get charged with a misdemeanor. But I truly believed I would never see freedom again. I thought, this is it. This is over. They've got me. My life is over. And I've never had a suicidal thought in my life, but I'd say at least a dozen times when I was in jail, I thought about just ending it because I didn't think that there would be any hope on the other side.
Gosh. Well, thank God.
When did you get out? When did you see a judge finally? And how did that all happen?
Well, so it was on the second day. A guard came to the cell and told me that I had an attorney phone call. I had no idea who this person was. So they, another thing that they told us as we're being processed in is that because of COVID, no one's allowed to have visitors. You can't, you know, if someone comes to see you, they can't see you. You can't visit with an attorney. So I was able to visit with my attorney over the phone. So they let me out of my cell, which was everything in jail is horrific. Everything, because it, where I was like the movies where it's, you know, a row of cells on the first floor and a row of cells on the second floor. And I was on the second floor. And you have to walk past all of those doors to get to the end of the corridor and to be able to walk down. And it's just a sea of doors with eyes staring at you through the door. And all of the other inmates were furious that I had gotten out of my cell to be able to make a phone call. So they're screaming at me. They're threatening me. You know, they were just furious that I had gotten out just for a moment to be able to make my phone call. And so they walked me down to the first floor and put me on the phone with my attorney. My attorney told me that he had gotten a virtual hearing set up with a judge, that I would be having my virtual hearing later that day in about four hours. And he said that there was a 99% chance that the judge was going to order my release. My attorney said, I've already spoken to the prosecutor in D.C. I've already spoken to several people within the government. He said, they know you didn't go inside the building. They know you didn't commit any acts of violence or vandalism or destruction. He said, they're not going to fight for your detainment. And he said, this judge is a pretty good guy, and I can't see him deciding to keep you detained. And he said, so I feel good about how this is going. And he said, but the one thing I want to tell you is that he said things happen very, very slowly in the criminal justice system. So he said, even though the judge is likely to order your release, you still might not actually get out until tomorrow. And I just thought, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So I went back to my cell. It was about 4 hours later. I got out to go have my virtual hearing with the judge. The judge did order my release. I broke down in the virtual courtroom. I can't even describe to you what it feels like to be wearing an orange jumpsuit, looking at a judge who says to you, this is the case of the United States of America versus Brandon Straub.
This is the part where I lost it when I listened to that part of the story. I cannot comprehend how painful that had to have been.
I can't.
I couldn't believe it. And I mean, I don't even know the word, if it's shame, if it's despair, if it's just agonizing injustice. I'm just thinking the United States of America versus me.
Really?
And it felt like being in the Twilight Zone, because I mean, I have literally just gone through this now several days of torment, you know, feeling like being treated like a terrorist. And all of a sudden, the prosecutor in the case has this kind of jovial attitude. And he's like, we know Mr. Straub didn't go inside the Capitol, and we know Mr. Straub didn't engage in any violence or vandalism or destruction that day. So we have no objection to Your Honor allowing Mr. Straub to be released pending, you know, pretrial, you know. And I'm thinking, if you know all of this, why is this happening?
Why am I here? Yeah.
Because I hadn't even been interviewed. I mean, it's not even like the FBI came and knocked on my door and said, we have some questions for you, and interviewed me and then said, you know what, we want to file charges. It was, what happened was they saw my video, you know, they'd been tagged 600 times, and a family member turned me in. I was turned into the FBI by a family member. That was in their report that they released to the public. And so they saw, the FBI saw my video on Twitter, which I chose to upload. You know, it wasn't that someone else caught me on video. I took the video. I chose to upload the video, and the FBI saw it. And based off of that video, the FBI went to a judge in DC and asked for an emergency order to have me arrested, which they were granted. So I was never indicted by a grand jury. No, this was never, this was, the FBI went to a judge. The judge said, yes, this is an emergency, go get him. And the FBI came into my apartment, put handcuffs on me, and took me to jail. And at no point did someone say, why were you there? What was your intention? What did you do? They had already completely created their story of what I had done. And then to hear this prosecutor be like, well, we know he didn't do this. We know he didn't do that. And I'm just going, what in God's name is happening here? Like, this is insane. So the judge ordered my release, and it was about 7, 8, 9 hours later, I was released. I was released like right at midnight. And it was, you know, they took me out. They gave me my clothes back. They opened a side door of the jail and said, you're free to go. And I just walked out of the jail on this. I was in a back alley. Again, everything was still covered in snow.
And they just are like, bye. Like, they don't take you home. They don't, like, I mean, what are you supposed to do? Did you get all your stuff back?
You had to like call a cab. You had to like hail a cab.
I had no phone.
What do you?
I had no phone. The FBI had taken my phone. The FBI had taken my computer, my iPad, everything. So I just was standing out on the side of the building in the snow.
Oh,
and I just walked. My attorney on that phone call had told me that Libby, my friend and executive director of Walkaway, had flown to Omaha to be with me should I have been released. And when my team comes to Nebraska, they always stay at the same hotel. So I knew, I had a pretty good idea of where she would be. So I walked to that hotel, and I got there, you know, like 1 a.m. And they told me what room she was in, and they allowed me to call her in the room. And then I went and I spent the next several days with her in the hotel.
Wow.
Okay. I think it's important at this point because there's obviously going to be people that listen to this that hate you already, right? That hate us, that hate you, that think there's nothing that you can possibly say that makes you innocent of being a total terrorist. So I think it's important at this point to just let's talk about the fact that I think all three of us would agree there were some people that did awful things on January 6th that need to be held accountable. There are things mm-hmm. that you tweeted that you now, in hindsight, which of course is 2020, you now know were misconstrued and mischaracterized based on the fact that you only had the experience on one side of the Capitol. You did not have the experience that other that we saw on TV that would have right. prevented you, that would have stopped you in your tracks from ever even tweeting out the things that you tweeted. So I of think course. That is like an important reset here. But and obviously those are things that you now have regret about, that you have yourself characterized as those were mistakes, but they were based on what I knew at the time.
Right.
So knowing all that and like setting that record or setting that table, fast forward to now, because now you entered into a plea. You were then ultimately charged with misdemeanors, but you're facing civil suits now, right?
Yes. So, yeah, when I got out of jail, that's when I finally learned what my charges were. They charged me with two felonies and a misdemeanor. One felony was knowingly occupying restricted grounds. One felony was impeding an officer in the line of duty, which is kind of too much to get into. And as you said, people can watch the Mark Levin interview, and I feel like that's sort of addressed. But needless to say, I want to repeat, not only did I not, but I've never been accused of engaging in any violence, vandalism, destruction, or anything. Even the government acknowledges I didn't engage in any of that. But to get more information on that, I think you can watch the Mark Levin interview. And then the misdemeanor that I was charged with was disorderly conduct, I think like on Capitol grounds or something like that. And in the end, it took a very long time, more than a year. But ultimately, they dropped the felony charges against me and I pled guilty to the misdemeanor charge of disorderly conduct. It's a nonviolent class B, what the court deems a petty offense, misdemeanor charge. And but in September of this last year, you know, as if things weren't bad enough, you know, as I'm going through this year of nonstop cancellation, horrible press. I mean, it's any of us, you're used to bad press. I'm used to bad press. You know, but I mean, we're talking about stuff like being labeled a terrorist, an insurrectionist, a key figure in the January 6th insurrection, you know, when in fact I was one of the last people probably in the country to even learn that people were going inside and one of the last people to even understand what that meant, because I didn't even have the ability to watch it on television, you know, to see what was happening. But in September of this last year, a law firm in DC, I refer to them as a social justice warrior law firm, because if you look at their website, I think you'll learn everything that you really need to know. This is a, they're very racially biased and motivated. This is a nonprofit law firm in DC that seems to dedicate most of its resources to fighting white supremacy and all of these, you know, but I don't mean like legitimate white supremacy. I mean, like you voted for Donald Trump, so you're a white supremacist.
You are white, therefore
you're a white supremacist. Right.
So in September, you know, I didn't find out by being served a summons or anything like that. I found out by reading news articles that said that I was being sued along with Donald Trump, Roger Stone, and dozens of other people because this, what I call a social justice warrior law firm in DC, this is my assumption, they went out and found seven Capitol police officers who happened to be Black and brown people. And their lawsuit alleges that they are owed damages because what happened on January 6th was a racially biased crime.
Oh, my God. You are freaking kidding me.
Here's the thing. It's not that I'm not happy that this is happening to me. And it's, I mean, already I've spent $40,000-$50,000 in legal fees just on the civil case alone. So it's just another nightmare. But if the conservative movement and if conservative media at large would get on board with what is going on, and they won't. I mean, I'm having an impossible time getting my story out because people are too afraid to have a January 6th convict, right, even if it's Brandon Strock from Walkaway, on to tell their story. this civil case actually has the power to completely reverse the narrative that the left has created about January 6th. Here's just one example. My entire experience, nearly every moment that I was at the Capitol, which is a very short window of time, is documented on video. I filmed almost everything that I was doing. And even during the times that I was breaking the law, which is to say that I went up on the Capitol steps and, you know, the number of other things that they consider to be disorderly conduct, that was an 8-minute window of time that I was engaging in criminal activity. The rest of the time, I was just interviewing people for, 20 or 30 minutes on the Capitol grounds, which was not a crime to do that. But every moment of my criminal activity is recorded by me on video. Now, in this civil case, that is the 7 Capitol police officers and this what I call social justice warrior law firm, they are alleging, this is their words in the suit, that Mr. Strzok violently breached barricades to enter the Capitol grounds and proceeded forward toward the Capitol, where he physically assaulted police officers, including the plaintiffs.
Holy crap.
Including the plaintiffs. These are people I have never met in my life.
Your video totally disproves that. How can they even do this?
They weren't even on the same side of the building.
Oh my God.
What in the world?
I have never met them. I have never shared oxygen with them. I don't even know who they are, but they're alleging that I physically assaulted them and that they're owed damages. This is the truth of January 6th. And I can't even tell you how disheartening it is that, first of all, the left, as usual, controls 90 to 95% of the narrative about January 6th. But even the 5 to 10% that the right is interested in is only about Ray Epps and only about that it was an FBI operative thing. I have appeared on Fox News more than 75 times over the last 2 or 3 years, and they won't even talk to me to get this experience out because they're too afraid of the optics of having someone on who was arrested or who's facing this.
Yep.
And the point is,
why?
What's happening to me is unjust.
Right.
Unjust. It's, and I'm not asking them to endorse me. I'm not asking Fox News or Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity. I'm not asking anyone to have me on and say, you did nothing wrong. You're being railroaded. Just let me tell my story.
Just listen.
What does Mark say about that? What does Mark Levin say about that? Because he's obviously, I mean, he's a part of that network.
He's on Fox. Yeah, he's on Fox. Yeah.
What did he give you any insight?
I don't think I would feel comfortable sharing my perception of how he feels about it. I will say, here's what I think I am not stepping out of bounds to say. My interview with Mark Levin was supposed to be on Life, Liberty, and Levin on Fox News. And 2 days before taping, Fox pulled out and said they're not going to do the interview. And at that point, we switched to doing the interview for Levin TV. I'd rather not comment on how I believe Mark feels about that. But that's what happened.
Okay. It's so frustrating.
So basically you are kind of limited or to telling your story on podcast. I mean, it's not like on net
as of now.
Right. And that's unfortunate. That's very, I mean, it's fortunate because we're happy to do it, but I mean, it's also unfortunate for you. It's unfortunate because it's kind of like, it goes back to something you said in the Levin interview, which is something I was going to say in the beginning. And that is it was a comment that stood out to me and that resonated. And that is, there's so much like conservatives turning on conservatives and not backing up conservatives. And that we see it. We've seen it for years. And it's always bothered me, Brandon. It's just always something.
Oh, it bothers me a lot.
Yeah. So.
Well, and first of all, thank you for having me on to be able to share this. Like, I honestly, it means the world to me. Thank you for, I'm not saying supporting my behavior on January 6th, not that, but just supporting my right to tell my story and to allow the audience to decide for themselves how they feel about it and what's going on. I mean, that's really it. And again, it's this bizarre paradigm, like alternate sort of reality where on the one hand, after a year of being investigated by the FBI and the Department of Justice and being put through the ringer by the criminal justice system, the federal criminal justice system, it was determined by them that they were comfortable dropping felony charges and only charging me with a nonviolent Class B misdemeanor for my behavior outside of the Capitol. But if you read the stories about me, I mean, the Washington Post just did a story 10 days ago about me, and the headline was MAGA influencer was trying to start a civil war.
So what would you, Brandon, what would you say to those people who are like, well, he's not explaining what he wanted to have happen that day. Why was he there? What was his intention? What did he hope the outcome of that day would be? So you have the floor. Tell us.
My intention for being in D.C. on January 6th was to speak at an event. I didn't organize the event. I had nothing to do with putting the event together. I was one of dozens of people that were asked to speak at the Capitol. My understanding of the, and I'll be the first to say, there was probably a lot of disorganization behind the scenes with the people who were supposed to be organizing this event. Now, I'm not talking in terms of, you know, not providing proper security and that this, that's not even what I'm talking about. I'm talking about logistically. I mean, because I had people saying, well, President Trump is going to speak at 9 a.m. at the Ellipse, and then we're all going to march to the Capitol, and we're all going to be speaking at 11 a.m. And then it was like, you know, a day or two before it was, well, now we think Trump is going to speak at 11 a.m. So we're pushing back to 2 p.m. I mean, it was just constantly that. And I didn't care. You know, I was like, I'm there to speak. What do I care if it's 11 or 2 or 5 or what, you know, just tell me where to be and I'll be there and I'll do my job, which is to get up and, you know, say, we want an audit. We want an audit. That's why I was there, because I felt, and I think millions of people felt, like something felt very wrong with the 2020 election. And I think that it's well documented from November 4th through to January 6th. I'm on video numerous times saying, if Joe Biden won the election, cool. Like, it is what it is. I don't like it, but I'll live with it. And as a matter of fact, I think that my organization, Walk Away, will do better under Joe Biden than it did under Trump. I mean, I think it was actually an inhibition to my mission of trying to get people to walk away from the left that Trump was in office, because people were so paralyzed by their hatred of Trump that most people weren't even willing to budge or consider. But fine, let's let a Democrat take control. Let's let Joe Biden take control. And now probably more people will be willing to listen to me. So I was okay with it.
Right.
But what I really wanted was to represent the American voter who was going, you know, we've tried to take dozens of cases to court and challenge this. The courts won't even hear the cases. You know, it was really a lie that the media was saying, you know, dozens of cases have lost in court. They didn't lose in court. They were never heard. And so what I was in D.C. to say, and I, as far as I know, every other person that I was associating with, was that we want an audit, a thorough audit. We want to have the signatures matched. We want the machines to be audited. We just want to know that if Joe Biden got 80 whatever million votes, that they were all legitimate votes, that they weren't duplicates, that they weren't people who had died, that they weren't people who were felons or illegal citizens. You know, we just want to know that our vote mattered. That's it. That's it. You know, and once again, our side allowed the left to completely take control of the narrative, because if you read most of the stories about January 6th, it was a mob of Trump terrorists descended on the Capitol to try to overthrow the election, essentially to have Donald Trump reinstated. I was not there to have Donald Trump reinstated.
Right.
Exactly.
Absolutely not.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
I'm so glad that you said exactly that, because that's really the main message. I mean, people want to paint you as some whacked out QAnon weirdo, and all of us get lumped into that group, right? All of us. And I think that's what happens with the main players on Fox. They're like, well, we don't want to be associated with Q. Well, I don't either, because that's not who we are.
It's not even that. It's not even just Q. I think that nobody on our side wants to talk about what actually happened on January 6th, or some of the people who were in fact arrested that day. And some of the people who were there, who actually saw, who were on the grounds and who saw what happened. I think it's important for people like you to tell some of the stories and tell us really what happened and what happened to you. It's important for you to tell your story. And I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to talk to you and that you were able to tell your story to us and give us a personal account. Because, you know, not only are you obviously a conservative, and it's important for conservatives to support conservatives, but you're our friend, you know, and that means and that means something to us. So
it does to me too. Thank you. If there's one more thing I could say, just quickly, and I'm sure that in the coming months, perhaps we'll even talk again and get more into some of these things, but, you kind of set the table with the last thing that you just said, talking about, you know, the other people who got arrested, and to be really clear, we shouldn't have to, you know, qualify this, but I guess we do have to. We're not talking about the people who were smashing windows and scaling walls.
No.
But for the people that even the Department of Justice has acknowledged were nonviolent and ended up after a year-long nightmare, ended up being charged with a parading inside the Capitol nonviolent misdemeanor charge, which even that I'm not excusing. I'm not sitting here saying, you know, those people did nothing wrong, whatever. I think if it's illegal to go inside the Capitol and
it's illegal.
Parade.
Right, it's illegal.
It's illegal. And those people pled guilty and they're facing the consequences for that. But what I want to say is that I am one of the people, along with hundreds of others, who after a year of investigation, it was decided that the appropriate charges against us are nonviolent misdemeanor charges. And in my case, I didn't even go inside the building. So it's not even a parading charge. It's a disorderly conduct on the grounds charge. And all of us are facing consequences for this that are synonymous with what somebody would face if they had committed an act of terrorism. And we probably don't have time today, but people need to know, as far as I know, nearly every person who was charged, even if it was a nonviolent misdemeanor, has been given a designation, which is called Quad S. That's S-S-S-S. And what that designation means is, this is not my words. I interviewed a TSA agent on video, and I can share that video publicly. And this TSA agent told me it is the highest level terrorism list that you can be on and still be allowed to get on an airplane. And because of this, we have to go through hours of screening at the airport, and a team of TSA agents follows us around the airport. Sometimes they have dogs and they follow us from security to the gate and around the airport. And then before we board the plane, we have to go through another screening in front of all of the passengers, complete with a full body pat down and every item taken out of our bag, swabbed and tested for explosive materials. And then if you have a connecting flight, they do it again at the connecting airport.
Yeah. And meanwhile, pedophiles and rapists are just moving about freely through the country. I mean, it's
well, and who knows who's coming over our southern border, right? All kinds of actual terrorists, and they don't give a shit. I mean, this is just so maddening. So now what are you able to do, and what is next, and what is your life right now?
So after a year of continuances in my case from the DOJ, it took over a year before I was able to get to sentencing. My sentencing was about 2 weeks ago, I'd say. And I was sentenced to now please bear in mind, this is after I've already spent 2 days in jail and 24-hour lockdown, a year on pretrial supervision, which, by the way, is stricter than probation. They take your passport. You're not allowed to leave the state without permission. You have to check in with an officer every single week. You have to request permission to do certain things. That's pretrial. So I've already gone through a year of pretrial supervision and spent 2 days in jail. And then my punishment has now just begun. So I was just now sentenced to 3 months of house arrest. I'm not allowed to leave my apartment for 3 months. I was sentenced to 3 years of probation, 60 hours of community service, the maximum fine of $5,000 and $500 restitution to the Capitol, even though it was acknowledged that I didn't do any damage to the Capitol. One thing I'd like to say as well is that the one area I'd say that I really lucked out is that the government, in addition to these things, was requesting So the prosecution was requesting that as a condition of my probation, which again is 3 years, the government wanted the right to surveil my phone, my computer, my bank account, my social media account, and my email accounts for 3 years as a condition of my probation. And the judge did not grant them that.
Okay. Well, I guess thanks for that favor, Judge. Holy crap. Oh my God. Brandon.
Wow. I know. What a story.
What a story indeed.
Right. Wow.
And thank you for telling it to us. I mean, we appreciate your trust in us and we were glad to do it, obviously. And so this is a little outside of our normal timing in terms of podcast. So we're going to try to get this out in the best ways that we can without getting shut down by all the various platforms. So we're going to be selective about how we do that, but we're definitely going to do it. And we appreciate, we want to keep updated on what's happening with you. So please reach out when there's new, you know, information to share, and we will help you get it out there.
Thank you. Could I just say quickly how people can help if they want to help?
Is always.
So I'm still facing the civil suit and I've gone through a lot with the criminal suit. If anybody would like to help in terms of a legal defense fund, that they can do so at my website, which is brandonstrakka.com. And my last name is spelled S-T-R-A-K-A. And perhaps even more importantly, Walk Away is coming back. My team and I have an amazing plan for relaunch this year, and we could use all the support that we can get. Also, we just revamped our website and it's amazing. So even if for no other purpose than just go check out our new website, walkawaycampaign.com. Please become a volunteer. Please donate to the relaunch of Walk Away and check out every single page of walkawaycampaign.com, because we're really excited about and proud of our new website and we have amazing plans for our comeback.
I bet, because so many people right now, I bet, are wanting to walk the heck away.
Yeah, so am I, but I can't leave my apartment.
You can just walk a lot around in your apartment. Yeah, a lot.
walk around.
It's better than those 4.5 steps. I mean, that's right. You got a lot more than 4.5 steps.
I've got
in
like
your
16 now.
That's right.
Well, hugs, Brandon. Thank you so much.
Hugs to you
for chatting with us. And you take care, and then keep in touch. Okay.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk soon. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.